July the 26th, location, Paris, of course, and the Place de la Concorde. We finally made it. We've made it to the end of 2026 Tour de France. Of course, we started this tour thinking, wondering, maybe hoping, certainly for the sake of this series, that Paul Sixas could be riding onto the Place de la Concorde or Champs-Élysées in yellow. That was probably a fanciful, it was a fanciful dream, of course. We've talked so much in this series about the very long and continuing French drought, 41 years since Frenchman last won the Tour de France. Bernard Hinault, that was the 21st of July 1985. He rode on to the Champs-Élysées. He became a five-time winner that day. Of course, Tadej Pogacar is going to become a five-time winner today, we're pretty sure. Hinault, after accepting the yellow jersey from Jacques Chirac, he promised that the following year he would work for Greg LeMond. He sort of did, sort of. That's a very contentious subject. But of course, he didn't win another tour. And France haven't won another tour. And Sixas is not going to win this year's tour either. For now, fourth place, extraordinary result. It's been an amazing 3 weeks for him. We've learned a lot about him, learned a lot about where he's come from and hopefully about where he's going as well. And well, French fans will certainly hope that before too long, we'll be standing on the Place de la Concorde heralding a French winner and, well, finally celebrating the end of those 41 years of hurt.
First, Paul, do you have confidence with us? Second, do you have the conviction that later on, 28, 29, 30, we will win together to Total France?
Ça revient, it's coming home. How France will win the tour again is a Kilometre Zero series written and produced by me, Daniel Freiber. Ad-free versions of these episodes will be available exclusively for friends of the Cycling Podcast. Go to thecyclingpodcast.com to sign up as a friend of the podcast, and please remember that by doing so, you are enabling us to cover the Grand Tours on the ground and produce these special series and episodes.
And now proves to everybody, this man is a beautiful climber, and he's proved it on the best mountain of the tour. Marco Pantani.
Amid all the talk of Tadej Pogacar taking aim at Marco Pantani's record on stage 19, everyone forgets that Alpe d'Huez was actually made in Slovenia. Well, at least in so much that the hotel owner who first lobbied for the tour to ascend the Alp in 1952, Georges Rajon, stumbled upon the magic ingredient that made the mountain world famous on a hunting trip in 1964 in what is now Slovenia. The Versich Pass had 30-odd more hairpins than the Alp. They were cobbled, and Rajon also noticed that each one bore a sign and a number. Rajon thought that was a clever idea. So clever that he took it straight back to France, from the Julian Alps to the Alp. The Tour de France wouldn't return until 1976, but when it did, the numbered hairpins were as much of a talking point as the stage winner, Joop Zoetemelk. The race would come back to the Alp 9 times in the next decade, including twice in 1979, like this year. In the process, the Hollywood climb, as tour historian Jacques Augendre called it, was supplanting the Ventoux, the Galibier or the Tourmalet as the race's most iconic destination.
There'll be a separate time for Bjarne Riis. The window for Marco Pantani, and we believe he climbed Alpe d'Huez today at a record speed. We'll confirm that for you tomorrow.
As we've mentioned once or twice in this series, France hasn't won the Tour since Bernard Hinault's victory in 1985. On the morning of stage 19, the best placed Frenchman in the 2026 edition, Paul Sixas, was fourth overall, 7 minutes, 11 seconds behind Pogacar. Cycling and the Tour weren't coming home yet, not in one sense.
Pour l'instant, si ça peut continuer ainsi, si je peux avoir des bonnes jambes, faire des bons efforts.
But in another, they always return to source at l'Alpe d'Huez. The drive up the mountain that day was typically rambunctious.
Bah, très très fort pour son premier tour, très chaud. Ah, c'est l'attaque de Sexas. On les va au bord.
Il veut le Tour de France à fond, bordel.
Pogacar made his move right at the bottom when the breakaway group containing Richard Carapaz, Sepp Kuss and Lenny Martinez still had a 3-minute advantage. Sexas's teammate Matthew Riccitello had also been in the early move. The American finally seemed to be coming good right on time after a torrid first fortnight in his debut tour.
Yeah, definitely the last few days have been really fast, on paper isn't great for the little guys. For sure it's not great for me, but also I think, yeah, that's not the sole reason that sometimes I feel like I'm not where I feel like I should be on the climbs. But also
with Pogacar closing in on Kuss, Carapaz, Martinez, victory and history further up the climb, Riccitello could finally drop back to Shepherd Sexas. Only when he did, Evenepoel first, then Del Toro were both able to skip away. As on the Plateau de Solesson a few days earlier, Sexas's head now dipped between his shoulders, the lightness in his pedal stroke becoming a lurch up the slope. Nevertheless, Evenepoel would end up beating him by only 16 seconds, and Del Toro by 4. The Mexican's cushion on GC was 24 seconds, too thin for him to sleep easy.
Ils ont fait un travail 5 étoiles. Tout le monde était à son meilleur niveau. Quand on voit que
5 stars was Sexas's verdict on his team's performance. Riccitello had been magnificent, he said. Unfortunately, Evenepoel and Del Toro were simply stronger, but tomorrow there'd be a rematch, with that pair and the Alp. Pogacar was in another category, his own race, on another planet. Pantani's record had fallen by 1 minute and 24 seconds.
English one,
you were just riding one of the most epic climbs. Cycling famous here in France, Isaac, Remco, all taking swings at you. What was your tactic when they were launching?
Just try to hold on, to think about what the best strategy is, and to feel how should I do the work with the legs of today. And I think in the end I did the best I could. And yeah, today Isaac, Remco, and Tadej were better. Today way better, but in the end it's still a good day, and tomorrow will be crucial for the GC.
Thank you very much.
C'est terminé,
c'est
terminé.
C'est terminé.
C'est de la route à pas.
C'est le meilleur, Paul.
It had been said before the tour that French expectations may be harder for Sexas to overcome than any mountain.
Justement, là, il essaye d'évacuer son téléphone.
Soigneur Sabino Pignatelli had told us earlier in the race that Sexas wasn't looking at social media, and we hoped for his sake that was true. The youngest rider in a tour field for 89 years was 2 days from Paris, 24 seconds from the podium, and yet a growing French contingent in the online peanut gallery already seemed to be losing patience. He was better in the Basque Country in April, or he has no punch were common refrains, or variations on those themes. They sold us Alberto Contador, we got Cadel Evans, wrote one fan on X, intending to criticise and forgetting that Evans had won a tour.
All the shit you get leading my Instagram.
Jasper Philipsen is a decade older than Sexas and you'd think more thick-skinned, yet even he admitted to having deleted Instagram to shield himself from the negativity.
I remember, but
on the morning of stage 20, Lenny Martinez was smiling as usual, but he'd also been showered with a confetti of criticism for how he'd ridden on L'Alpe d'Huez. There was a real chance that the race would end without a French stage winner for the first time since 1999. Yet they now had 2 riders in the top 5 overall, with Martinez and Sexas. the former was riding a brilliant tour, having turned just 23 in the first week. Long gone, indeed nearly forgotten, were the bleak post-Festini years we revisited earlier in this series, when a veteran Christophe Moreau, himself once a Festina, was the sole tricolour flag bearer, even on the outer margins of the top 10. A glorious new age for the French may indeed be dawning. Meanwhile, on the afternoon of stage 20, another era seems to be drawing to a poignant conclusion, as Warren Barguil and Julien Alaphilippe rode across the line together 26 minutes after the winner. Both men have contracts with their current teams to race next year, but Alaphilippe sat cross-legged on the tarmac behind the finish line and told reporters it would almost certainly be his last tour.
No, no. Là, j'ai plus de plaisir là. C'est bon, c'est fini là. C'est l'heure d'arrêter quand il n'y a plus de plaisir.
It was no fun, he said, to spend 3 weeks struggling. Earlier in the race, Barguil had also told L'Equipe that he and Alaphilippe had already commiserated over how they had been left behind. Power numbers that a few years ago brought them stage wins were now entry codes for the Gruppetto. People don't realise how much the level has risen. Our generation has seen this massive chasm open up, Barguil said.
Be more happy? Excited about the end.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Rising speeds in the pro peloton will soon no longer be Luke Durbridge's problem.
Ridiculous day in general.
He definitely raced the 21 hairpins of Alpe d'Huez for the last time on stage 19. For the Australian is retiring at the end of the year, after 15 seasons in the pro peloton. We talked on the morning of stage 20 about the day before, the sport Durbridge is leaving behind, and a little about Generation 6S.
If you had to imagine the next 10 years of professional cycling, what direction do you see it going? The world that, you know, Paul Sexas is going to inhabit for the next 10 years?
Oh, I think we're going to have to do something about the gears, I reckon. We're just going to have to restrict the gears. I think, honestly, like, we're going so fast and there's only more and more road furniture. But if everyone has a 53-11 on, then, not going to slow racing down, but I think it still will, because the problem is now if you've got the 10, you're on SRAM, you know, if you're in the bad position, you can move to the front again. Before, you just spun out. So once you establish position, the peloton stays in one line. You can't go from front to back, but now you can go from front to back. And you're just going to have to move the motorbox. Some sort of drone footage or something like that, you're going to have to sort of sort that out, because what happened yesterday is also just kind of ridiculous with the amount of motorbikes and the way we were going over these rollers and these downhills. You're talking like 70 k's an hour on the flat. We're going faster, so motorbikes are having to take a bit more risks, a bit more dangerous for them. So maybe we're just more and more attuned to what actually CDA and drag is. You know what I mean? Flappy jerseys back then, didn't really think about it too much, but now everyone knows just a little bit. Even motorbike from here to the flag over there, so makes a difference.
Yes. What about the just sort of environment that these kids are going to live in? And there's a lot of talk, always has been, about how much information they're bombarded with and how much pressure they're under and how careers are going to be shorter. What's your view on that?
Oh, definitely they're going to be shorter. The thing is, though, it's like when you, like, obviously salaries are triple as well. So it's like one of those things. It's like you're a CEO of a company, you know, you're on a big salary, you got the big responsibility. It's kind of the same. It's like you're a young guy and you're on millions of dollars. Like, you know, you saw the Yamal, 19 years old, Spain, you know, like, there's a fair bit of pressure on his shoulders, a whole country on him, he's 19 years old. So, look, to be honest, if the salaries keep going up, then the pressure's going to go on. But then the careers can be shorter. You know what I mean? Like, they get in, they're amazing for 5 years, and then they retire and that's it. Like, I still just see the careers will get shorter, the contracts will get higher, and, I feel for the kids that sort of potentially don't come straight in and win straight away because they're in and they're out. But, you know, that's it. It's like the pressure of life, really, isn't it? It's like, you know, you get paid the big bucks, you get the big responsibility. It's sort of it. And if you don't want it, well, there's plenty of other people out there who'd be killer to do this job, so just sort of work it out. But it's just been tricky when you're putting that sort of mentality on a 19-year-old. But we're always saying, you know, it's poor 19-year-olds, you know, they can this and that. But you're like, yeah, poor 19-year-old with $3 million in the bank too. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think it's really important to have a really good structured family behind them and they can sort of help manage that. And managers and teams will have to become more and more like development teams to support that, so they can handle the pressure of, why do you actually want to do this? Do you want to win a Tour de France stage, or Tour de France? You actually want to win the Tour de France, or you want to earn money? Like, it's just, we never, I don't think anyone in this peloton got into this because of earning money. And I don't think that's a really true motivator. So they just need to work that out. And
that morning, Fred Wright of Q36.5 also sounded bewildered, almost shell-shocked by a tour that was about to break its average speed record for the second straight year.
This has been, just getting through it has been ridiculous. It's really, it's the tour, of course, but it doesn't get any easier every year. It seems to be just a speed. I don't know what,
Wright belongs to an age bracket halfway between Durbridge, Alaphilippe Dao and Sexas.
It's mind-blowing. I think, obviously, there's a lot of French hope behind him, maybe to be on the podium, but just to be where he is already, I think, it's more than what I expected. I kind of thought, OK, maybe third week he'd start faltering a bit, but he's just... And I think with someone like Luke in the car and the team he's got around him, he's got really good heads to look after him. I think, I mean, I watched highlights of the race yesterday. I think they also race really well for him, so... No, yeah. Good on him.
Oh, mate, you've got a lovely day ahead of you, so I won't keep you any longer.
I can't wait.
I'm Pierre Mergeau from L'Équipe.
Pierre, your verdict on Paul Sexas' Tour de France so far, and we're going to issue a disclaimer. We're talking in Bourdoisin on the morning of the penultimate stage.
Fourth for the moment in GC. Can go for the podium, so it's something exceptional what he's doing. Always following the best, or the close to the best, if we accept Pogacar. The only thing I miss is that he didn't really attack for the moment. It seems sometimes he's more on the reserve. I don't know if it's good, but yeah, he waits. He tried to keep his pace, because he doesn't want to give too much, thinking about the day after and the day after, etc. So maybe we've seen this yesterday in L'Alpe d'Huez, and I think we had the same the other day, not Markstein, but I don't remember. But it seems he had a little bit more than what he gave. It's hard to say, because he always arrives third or fourth, so it's exceptional. But it's the only thing who is lacking maybe in this Tour de France. And from outside also, I think people are expecting huge things from him. And it's exceptional again and again, I insist. But we just miss the attack of Paul Sexas. And I hope we can see this in the last stage before Paris now to take the podium.
Relative to your expectations before the Tour, where is he? Has he exceeded them, or is he more or less where you expected him to be?
What we hoped, we expected big things, but without knowing what he can do in 3 weeks. But no, more or less in what we hoped from him. Pogacar is much better. We were hoping he could fight maybe with Vingegaard, with Evenepoel. He fights more or less. He has only lost some seconds, so no, he's in the game like we hoped. And just at the end, yeah, the podium would be such a big achievement compared to the fourth place, even if it's only 30 seconds between the two. But yeah, he's what we hoped, what some people were dreaming about, I think, also in his team also. No, he's where he wanted to be and where we wanted him to be, I think.
Well, how confident would you say you are that Paul Sexas is a future winner of the Tour de France?
It's the same problem than before. There's only one winner on the Tour de France. So we have Pogacar now, and we see that Del Toro is, for the moment, a bit better than him. So let's see in the future. Now, what we learned in this Tour de France is he has 3 weeks in his legs, in his head also. So this is a very good thing to build on for the future. And yeah, I think we can say he can fight for the win in the future. Win, we will see, but he can fight for the win for Tour de France, I think so.
I'm Sebastian Piquet, radio tour speaker since 2005 on the Tour de France and other races.
Seb, I would like your comprehensive verdict on Paul Sexas' debut Tour de France, please.
Spectacular for a rider of his age, riding his first Tour de France, finishing close to the podium is more than what could have been expected. I know a lot of French people were hoping for him to to battle it out with Pogacar and finish on the podium. But what he's doing now on his first, because it is his first three-week race, is spectacular.
What was the performance of the day that impressed you the most?
I don't think there is one performance of the day. I think it's just the fact that he managed to never have a bad day. He never had a bad day. He wasn't quite with Pogacar, but was always close to Del Toro, close to Ayuso, close to Evenepoel. So there's not one spectacular stage. It's just the consistent ride that he's had. That's for me what has been spectacular.
Seb, you're in the race director's car every day. You see the fans on the roadside. I must be honest, given how well he's performed, I maybe expected him to capture the imagination of the French public and the crowd even more. To me, it seemed almost as though they're not that familiar with him yet. They know the name. They know they've got a good young rider, but it's not Alaphilippe levels of a few years ago.
Yes, because he hasn't won a stage. He didn't wear the yellow jersey, so I think those are the things that make fans react. We've seen a lot of Sexas drawings or paintings on the road, on the side of the road, but not like an Alaphilippe in the past or a Bardet. I also think that he was maybe overprotected, and if he had more freedom and rode more on instinct, maybe something could have happened there. But he was, rightfully or not, overprotected by his team because he's young, because they want to take their time, and due to that, there maybe wasn't that attack or those attacks that would have maybe made the French public react.
Last thing then, Seb, are you more or less confident now than you were during the tour that cycling is going to come home, and that Paul Sexas is going to be the man who brings it home and wins the Tour de France? More or less confident than you were 3 weeks ago?
I'm as confident or as pessimistic as before. Honestly, he's there, but there are so many contenders, so many competitors. I mean, Pogacar will still be there for the next couple of years. Del Toro will be even better than he is this year. So it's really hard to tell if cycling is coming home.
Okay, sounds like you give it about a 50% chance is what I'm sort of getting.
Yeah, 50%. Yeah, 50%, which obviously isn't.
Take those odds.
It's not 80%, it's 50%.
That morning in Bourg-d'Oisans, Nicolas Prodhomme had echoed Sexas' battle cry of the previous evening.
Ouais, clairement. Enfin, c'est l'étape reine. Même s'il y a déjà des écarts, même il y a une grosse fatigue qui installe dans le peloton. On a déjà vu hier avec.
They were still in the race for the podium. They would try everything to displace Isaac Del Toro. The Mexican looked in trouble on the upper slopes of the Galibier. Pogacar, Evenepoel and Sexas indeed appeared to be pulling away until Pogacar dropped the pace. Sexas would admit later that he felt so good at this point, he was confident of dropping Del Toro on the Col de Saen. When they hit the bottom of that climb, the excellent Prodhomme joined Sexas from the group behind. Soon Riquitello would again come back from the one in front. 3.5 kilometres from the Saen summit, Riquitello swung to the left. Sexas tried to launch, but the jets wouldn't fire. He shook his head. Within 500 metres, Del Toro was nodding to Pogacar to resume their job swap and set the pace. And almost immediately, Sexas was losing contact. In the decathlon huddle at the finish line, a group of around 10 comprising parents, soigneurs, senior team management and press officers, the excitement suddenly turned to concern about Sexas' fourth place.
0.7, il faut qu'il fasse 3.57.
Moins 3 minutes. 1.6, il fait bien.
Combien?
1.6.
1.6.
1.6, donc il faut qu'il fasse 3.57.
Moins 3 minutes.
The French reporters waiting close by were also anxiously watching the clock.
3.56.
No, 2 or 3.
A sigh of relief when Sixt swung onto the finishing straight just under 2 minutes behind Martinez. His fourth place overall would be safe.
Same scene that we've seen almost every day. Sabino Pignatelli handing Paul Sixt as a towel, he's shaking his head. I mean, it's been a tough day for him, but he's saved. He's certainly saved his fourth place. And he's emotional. There could be some tears.
In the end, I'm fourth of the GC, so I didn't lose anything from yesterday, but I tried everything to drop Del Toro, and the legs were not good enough, and the head also. And that's why I cracked after. For me, it was third or nothing, and today's nothing.
Proud of this tour?
Yeah, proud of this.
Thank you, Paul.
Double, Paul!
Applause from the crowd. They're certainly proud of Paul Sixt.
Une étape, nous étions toujours là et presque tous les jours on a fait des résultats. Et Paul, il fait quatrième dans son premier Tour de France à 19 ans. Oui, je suis fier d'être un parti de cette équipe.
Pardon, c'est possible d'avoir une place, attention. Pardon.
Mathieu.
Allez, vive France.
Mathieu
Riccitello. He's just come over the line and he is going to congratulate or commiserate Paul Sixt. It's easy to think that it's finished on a bit of an anticlimactic note for Decathlon, same as CGM, with Sixt not managing to take the third place, but the message certainly loud and clear from his teammates is that so everyone needs to put their performance in perspective. Remember his age, that he's 19 years of age, and Tisponu is saying there that he has done many tours de France, and this is the one in which he's felt the level, certainly in the mountains, has been the highest.
Et ensuite tu payes les frais, tout ça. Moi je trouve qu'il a fait un excellent Tour de France, donc, et être quatrième, comme dit Thomas, c'est franchement, je pense qu'on se rend pas compte, on mesure pas.
C'est un Tour de France réussi.
Ouais, vraiment.
Mais
vraiment.
Laurent, dans un sens, t'as raison, parce que le public français se dit, il fait quatrième, mais on l'a pas vu attaquer. Mais ce qu'il faut rappeler, c'est que c'était de la découverte.
France National TV, you'll be familiar with some of the voices, Marion Rousse, Thomas Vauclair in their studio show just beyond the finish line there already. Well, they're talking about Paul Sixt's Tour de France and already debating whether there's any disappointment that he didn't show more of that flamboyance that we saw earlier in the year. The consensus among the experts, at least, Johan Ofredo, Marion Rousse and Thomas Vauclair, was that, well, no, he's ridden a fantastic tour. He hasn't really shown any major weakness, had no really bad days. And then there was obviously the example of today where he tried to accelerate on the Col de Sahin and he paid the price afterwards. And that sort of, well, from their point of view, underlined why he'd been sensible to ride as economically as he has over the last 3 weeks. Even the usually measured Bernard Thévenet had succumbed to the scramble for snap judgments, saying in an interview that afternoon he was slightly disappointed Sixt hadn't done better. Nonetheless, it was reassuring to note that most commentators had retained their critical faculties. Alex Rousse spelled it out nicely in L'Équipe, writing that it was not the time to turn one's nose up when France hasn't had a rider with this potential for 40 years. Those who reproach Sixt for not attacking, for having lacked flair, have truly mistaken the Tour de France for a video game in which the main character takes off at the touch of a button. That night, Sixt and the other 157 riders left in the race were heading to Paris on a TGV. The photos told us that Decathlon boss Dominique Serrière sat across the aisle from Sixt, Prodhomme and Aurélien Paris-Peintre. Headhunted in 2023 by the then owners of the team Ager Deux-Heures La Mondiale,
Serie has made his name by winning the Dakar Rally, once as a co-pilot in the early 90s, then seven times as a team manager in the noughties. His next assignment was as the head of the French Motorsport Federation, followed by a year at French rugby club Racing 92, Racing 92, before the jump into cycling, a sport he'd always enjoyed from afar.
C'est pas une question qui nous impressionne ou pas, c'est qu'il a une détermination d'un futur champion et que comme on disait.
Serriez has a reputation as a shrewd operator but a tough one. This was also how he was portrayed 2 years ago, perhaps a little gratuitously, in the Netflix documentary Tour de France Unchained. His head DS at the Tour, Luke Rowe, confirmed to us earlier in the race that Serriez certainly doesn't suffer fools.
First of all, his level of commitment. I think he's one of the hardest workers I know. Yeah, I don't know how he operates on how little sleep he has. You know, his passion, his real attention to detail. You know, if you just speak with him for 2 minutes, he'll have a laugh, and he's a bit of a character. But when you see him in the zone working, he's one of the best I've ever worked with.
Hard.
When he wants to be, yeah. When he wants to be, yeah. I think me and him, you know, we have a really good relationship, and it's a great relationship because we don't say yes to each other, and we'll if he says something and I don't believe in it, I'll question it, and if I say something and he doesn't believe in it, he'll question it, and we're quite direct with each other. But you know, we can really disagree about something, but only we always remind each other we're only doing that and we only disagree because we both want the best for the team. And if you want a yes man.
Our own Larry Warbass was of course riding for Decathlon when Serriez arrived.
Hey Daniel, so Dominique arrived at Decathlon the last year I was there. So he came maybe like, I don't know, sometime after the start of the year. And yeah, I mean, I guess I would say he was a polarizing figure. To be honest, I mean, I think he's been doing a pretty good job. Like you can see based on the results of the team, you know, it's headed in a really good direction. Reading the article from L'Équipe, I wouldn't credit him for like all of the wins in 2024. I think, you know, a lot of that was sort of switching to Decathlon in general. And yeah, I guess a lot more investment in performance, but that was really more from Decathlon than from him. So originally, like the thing was Decathlon brought him in, AG2R brought him in because they wanted to stop sponsoring the team. And they had bought the team from Vincent Lavenue for like pennies. And they wanted to be able to sell the team to Decathlon for a sizable amount of money. So they thought, you know, if they brought in a guy like Dominique, he would raise the value of the team and then they could sell the team to Decathlon and make some money on their investment, which I think was quite a good move because I'm sure they sold it for, a lot of money. Then, you know, I think they obviously kept him on board. And then the idea was, you know, I mean, he's pretty old. He might even be 65 now or something. So, you know, pretty close to retirement. So I think it was sort of a short-term plan to boost the value of the team and then sell it to Decathlon and then eventually have him move out. So, to be honest, I think he really ruffled some feathers because I guess for me being American, it's not that crazy to, get rid of people, especially if they're underperforming. But, you know, in a French company, that is not the norm. It's usually people have what's called like a CDE or like a CDI, which is like a contract, something indefinite. What that means is essentially once people get that contract, which after working a couple years in a company, you usually get, it's almost impossible to be fired. So the problem is then sometimes that leads people to get complacent and maybe not work as hard as they would have previously because they know they pretty much can't lose their job. So I think him coming in and sort of getting some people out who'd been there a really long time and maybe were a bit resting on their laurels was a bit of a shock. But I think, you know, the one thing I know, you know, I guess it was just a big shift for the organization because let's say it was pretty much a family run team and it was sort of like a family organization. And it definitely shifted to, you know, big business kind of. So I think that was difficult, like a difficult transition for a lot of people to accept. And yeah, I think he came in and essentially wanted to get rid of anyone who was sort of close or associated with Vincent. And, you know, I don't know if that was the right move because, you know, there are definitely good people and good riders that came in under Vincent. And yeah, I think, you know, he wanted to sort of un-French-ize the team. So, you know, he told me essentially they wanted to be an international team operating in France rather than a French team. So, yeah, I think, you know, yeah, there's pluses and minuses, different opinions, but I think in general, you can see based on performance and the way the team's been growing, I think he's been doing a pretty good job. And I think he did do a pretty good job of bringing on new partners and some new sponsors. So, you know, I mean, also easy to do when Decathlon is the main sponsor to, you know, attract partners like CMA CGM, which is a global shipping giant, because I'm sure Decathlon is probably one of their largest clients. So, you know, I think it was probably a combination of him and having Decathlon as a big sponsor. But yeah, in general, I mean, I still have pleasant connections with him. You know, when I re-signed with Tudor, you know, he sent me a message to congratulate me. I still talk to him at the races and stuff. But yeah, I think more or less he's been doing a pretty good job.
Most days at the tour, we see Serriez standing apart from the hive of worker bees that the area around the team bus becomes in the hour or so before stage starts and the hour or so after finishes. He wears a crisp white shirt bearing the team logo and a pensive or inscrutable look. He's often on the phone and generally cuts a slightly aloof or just more senior figure in the back-slapping jockeyish ambiance of the team paddock. He has a lot to celebrate at this year's tour, but also a lot on his mind. For it is Serriez mainly who will have to convince Sexas to extend his contract beyond 2027. At the start of the tour, Serriez said that talks with the rider's agent, Jone Lauka, will resume in mid-August. Incidentally, Lauka also represented Romain Bardet throughout his career, and Bardet will join Serriez at the head of Decathlon next season. I interrupt my own journey to Paris to call Serriez from the car on Sunday morning.
Good morning.
Bonjour, Dominique.
Ah, en français? Bon, ça c'est bien, numéro allemand qui parle français.
Ouais, si, je ne savais pas si vous parlez anglais ou...
Non, on peut faire en français, mais on peut faire en anglais. Moi, j'ai aucun souci.
Ah, okay. Thank you, Dominique. Thanks very much. So, Dominique, I saw that you took the train yesterday with the riders. Is that right?
I took the TGV, the fast train.
Yeah, yeah. So you were sitting next to Paul. How was Paul yesterday? What spirits was he in on the train?
No, he was quite good. Impressed by, you know, the 3 weeks and how, you know, the intensity and the level of the performance were. But a little bit, you know, in between, you know, disappointed, but sad.
Yeah.
Could not be able, you know, to beat the third place. But at least he knew that... For the first Tour de France, the main objective was, you know, to finish, to get the finish line tonight in on the Champs-Élysées, and also to get the maximum of experience for the years following.
Yeah.
So he really, you know, accept the situation. This experience will be useful for him for the following years. And the team's mate was great to, you know, permit him to try, because also you must try. So he tried it. Yeah. He didn't, you know, make a big crack because he has the level now to manage, you know, the pace. And he knew by the DS, you know, behind him, the gap between, you know, the leaders and also Miguel Martinez and him, that for sure he managed, you know, without losing 10 minutes or 15 minutes. That sometimes is the case when the riders drop, you know.
Mm-hmm. So now can you say that when you made the decision, or when you all made the decision that Paul was going to do the tour, it seemed like a pretty unanimous decision. It seemed as though having one flesh, Basque Country, that you were pretty much all in agreement. But was that the case? Or can you say now that actually there were differences of opinion? But how would you characterize that decision now?
Even now after, because it seems easier than before. When we make the plan at the start of the season, even in November 2025, we make the plan considering, you know, like three topics. The first, the health of Paul. Second, how Paul can be rebuilt and able, you know, to be ready for the Tour de France. And the third, how Paul and the team must do to be sure that Paul is getting experience and the finish in Paris.
Mm.
According to that, for sure we make the calendar that Paul are starting to make the race and to continue to prepare to make the week race and also to perform and also to check days after days and months after months how the body and all the data are on the green light to permit Paul and also us to consider the participation of the tour.
Mm.
Before, you know, the tour races like Liège, Bastogne, Liège, you know, and before, you know, the Flèche Wallonne, we had a deep meeting in the south of France, very confidentially, you know, close in my house. I have a house in Grasse, you know,
yeah,
above Cannes. And we put everything flat on the table to make the full analysis, how can be the options, how the team can be built, you know, around the Paul, and also how Paul feel. The first topics of the decision was made that, Paul, do you want to enter to the Tour de France? Because there was option to not enter, even to not enter in at the Vuelta to prepare, you know, the World Championship. And Paul was very motivated to take experience. He trusts a lot the team and how the team we was built, you know, around him. How also we prepare the camp, the 3 weeks, you know, in the Sierra Nevada and also, you know, the Tour Auvergne-Rhône-Alpes after the back in the Mountain Ozark, 1950. And the recon of stages.
Yeah.
And this was very well made in transparency. And always I was putting, you know, in place, no pressure, no trust. And you know how to work together to do the best recons. We make the recon also, you know, in the Pyrenees.
Yeah.
And the build of the commitment of Paul was made very professionally and in the full transparency with the aim of Paul.
And Dominique, at that meeting, who was there? Was it Alexandre Paco, Stephen Barrett? Was Paul himself?
No. It was very, very tight meeting.
Yeah.
The meeting was made with my deputy. Okay. You know, is
yeah, Mathieu. Yeah.
And you know, Jean-Baptiste Kikléonli.
Okay.
But why? Because Jean-Baptiste has got all the topics and all the figures and all, you know, the different options of, you know, training camp and whatever, that it was easier for Paul to not be, you know, around the too much person.
Yeah.
And also to have, like, it was in the afternoon, and after we had the dinner together at home, that he feel, you know, comfortable and quiet to have the chance for everything.
Okay. So, sorry, that was after Basque Country, before Flesh, you said?
Yeah. It was the weekend before the Monday, maybe 20 or 21st,
okay,
when we were flying up to Liège, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember maybe it was the 20th or the 19th. Okay. It was a Sunday. Okay. So the 19th of April, yeah. Because also Paul asked us to make this before Liège, yeah. And before the race is in Belgium, and because after it was 1 week rest,
yeah,
and the start on the camp in Charleroi, and before also the records, make the records for in the Vosges before to go in Spain.
Okay, and just going behind the scenes also a little bit of this Tour de France. We've learned today, it was reported in L'Equipe by Thomas Berthaud, I think, that Paul crashed in the recon in Barcelona and also he was slightly sick. Can you elaborate on that a little bit and just tell me, how worried you were?
No, honestly speaking, the slide that he has on the recon of stage stage two, because one was a TTT, it was a little. It was on the low speed.
Okay.
The road was like a dusty, maybe like a sandy sections, and he fell down very very slowly. But for sure, he has the arm of and also the little bit the legs. But yeah. At least there was no damage. He went back on the bike and he finished the training, and the sickness no. He was a little bit like a breeze. The nose, but he had the quite strong Tour de France,
yeah.
And even the team himself with him, we let the situation without any pressure, without also when we have to say thank you to all the media, to understand that he has to be quiet as soon as possible in the hotel and yeah. With the massage and the bedroom and the optimization of the travel with bus or with shuttle. So it was quite very very usable weeks,
yeah.
And Paul also was for sure under stress, but the team himself didn't put the pressure to him and to the teammate.
I was going to ask you just what was one thing about, because you're trying to change this team and you're trying to create a team that is capable of winning the Tour de France. What's one thing, would you say, that worked really well over the 3 weeks, and maybe one thing that didn't work perfectly over the 3 weeks?
Honestly speaking, I took the lead of the team 3 years ago. This is a long-term, commitment with also the strategic plan that we put in place.
Yeah.
We know that still we must improve, organization. We need to prove to improve also, the team itself. But at least what we can say with twin objectives of GC and also win stage, we did well. We already put on the writing paper or computer. The how will be the next step up for the following years, mm-hmm. And for sure there is plenty area that already we had identification, and the target is quite easy to see because the plan is quite strong.
Okay, and just so last two things, Dominic. Did you discover anything about Paul over the last 3 weeks that you didn't know already?
No, he was for sure like he is. No surprise. The strong determination, big concentration, the way to win. He has the DNA of the killer and the winner. But also we were concerned for getting huge experience for him for the following years, and also to bring him on the comfortable days and weeks that he should and he must finish the Tour de France. Over months, I read that there was the different camp that he must do. This is a tricky thing to do. He must not do. If it was me, he will do the Spain. The people very well accurate, or even the winners of the Tour de France, even the teammates, even the manager sportive was giving all of them, their voice.
Mm.
For sure. We have maybe a different area because the youngest now, big talent everywhere in the professional sport. They start early. And the philosophy with Paul, it was not to send Paul in Spain or in Italy. because also the main objective of the team and Paul is to win Tour de France.
Yeah.
As soon as you are getting, you know, experience, because you cannot describe, you can describe everything, even, you know, spectators, even, you know, the distance and whatever. So I feel, and we already, you know, align that this experience will bring him a lot for the years following. So it was the challenge. For sure, the challenge was sometimes tricky because we were, you know, worried about on the third week he can finish the stage and he can finish the tours. Mm. So it was also the balance, you know, to protect him, to also try to convince him that he must avoid to crack, you know, to be sick somewhere in the Alps, or, you know, in the Gauche, in the Markstein.
Yeah.
And after, you know, to drop like 15 or 20 minutes, that we already saw many riders, you know, totally, you know, destroyed. So he is there. He's quite happy. For sure, a little bit, as I tell you, disappointed, because when you are over days and week, at 20 seconds, 40 seconds to the third place, for sure the ambition was also to make the, you know, the objective for the third, you know, ranks. Mm. But at least also we must be clever. He has 19 years old. This is the first tour. Even when you check the good performance of Lenny Martinez, this is his fourth tour. When you check, you know, the experience of, you know, Del Toro, mm. like Isaac, he's a very high talent rider, but he's already made, you know, the big tour and several races. So we are, honestly speaking, we are very happy because we achieve, you know, the goal.
Yeah. Okay, then, I know that you said at the start of the tour you'll start talking about Paul's contract with him in August, because that's what he wanted, mid-August. Are you more confident now than at the start of the tour that you will be able to renew this contract beyond 2027?
You know, maybe a little bit better, but the percentage is a little bit, you know, less, because maybe 5% better. But at least I keep, again, you know, my philosophy. First, we prove that the team himself is growing up, even as a teammate. The guy was, you know, unbelievable. And Paul already said, like, even, you know, Tige, even, you know, Nico Prodhomme and Maturity Jello was at the meeting on the last, you know, 3 weeks, the third weeks, even Aurélien. And for sure, even, you know, the spring team did a very good job. We saw yesterday, again, you know, Danul at the climbing of the Col de Galibier. So this one of the topics. For sure, also to continue to create the confidence and the building with Paul. The team build also together with Paul, you know, the high level as it is now for the top, you know, three teams. Mm. And I did that. That it was also the main request of Paul to keep it quiet instead of the teams that they are talking to the door through the agent, like, you know, the top team like UAE, Visma, Ineos, or whatever, you know, even also Pinarello, Q36.5. We must be, you know, on the simple running order. First, Paul, do you have confidence with us? Second, do you have the conviction that later on, 28, some 29, 30, we will win together to the Tour de France? This is not, you know, even more complicated. And if there is a topic, as you know, for sure, how to continue to build, to, you know, to hire better teammates, better, you know, staff, better, you know, organization structure, we will have it. Because also one important point, I already said, you know, we have a strong owner as Decathlon. Mm. We have a strong partners like, you know, CMA, CGM, Adid, ADECO, Adid Shine. And they will help us, and they will make, you know, the support financially to be at the best proposal. Adid, the first topics that trust and conviction that this is a team that he will win, that he already won. He already won with us, you know. Yeah. So this is also very important. So we do the job. I am professional, you know, and it is on the hand. He has to take a rest. He will take a rest. And if it is not middle of August, it will be beginning of September. Okay. He's under contract until, December 2027, you know? Mm.
Okay, fantastic.
Excellent.
Thanks very much.
I'm Daniel Benson, and I write for the Daniel Benson Cycling Substack. I think he's had a great tour by any measure. He's going to finish either third or fourth, most likely fourth. And I think if you looked at that at the start of the race, you would have expected a result around there, just given the talent and his kind of trajectory at the start of the year. But I think what's been really impressive about his ride is just the maturity with which he's ridden. I know he's got some really good domestiques with a lot of experience within that team and good directors too, but you've never really seen him look under too much pressure, and I think that stems from what the team have kind of built around him. He doesn't seem to make any mistakes, and all of his performances that you've seen in the mountains look incredibly measured. I mean, yesterday on Alpe d'Huez, when Del Toro went away, you thought, okay, he could be losing 30, 40 seconds maybe here, but he used the last one of his domestiques, Riccatello, and then he used Skelmos really well, and in the end it was, 4 seconds at the line. And I think that showed a real level of maturity. And I think if you wind back to maybe February, March, when noises were starting to be made about whether or not Sexas should ride the tour, you had a lot of experienced people within the sport, journalists, ex-pros, etc., saying he's too young, he's not mature enough, he's not ready for it. But I think, and I was part of that to a degree, but I think what we've seen over the last 3 weeks, he's definitely shown that he's, got the fortitude and the skill set to be able to ride the tour at his age. The fact that, Pogacar has been so far ahead and we haven't seen that battle has almost meant that Sexas has kind of been able to ride his own race and not a race against Pogacar. And I think that's really, really benefited him. So he's been in that kind of cluster of GC riders. We would have included Remco up until Remco kind of pulled away with that time trial and the stage win in the mountains as well. But he's been with like Del Toro and Skelmos and Ayuso, and they've all kind of ridden together on a majority of the mountain stages until obviously Ayuso cracked in the last couple of days, and that's really helped him and benefited him. And that's where I think the hype and expectation has somewhat dissipated a little bit, and we've just seen, instead of like this incredible machine or aura around what his tour could potentially be and going up against Pogacar, where we just see the more mature, settled and consummate kind of performance.
It's like him coming home. Is he going to win the tour one day?
I mean, he's got the skill set. And I know you asked me this earlier, and I said, I think...
So 50%.
I said 38%. I don't know where I got that number. But I think it's really hard to say, because you can always say, Bernal's going to win this many tours, and you say Ulrich's going to win this many tours. And even when you win one, you don't know if you're ever going to get second. So it's really hard. And you've got to think about the fact that these riders are, bursting through the ranks younger and younger. And if, let's say, Pogacar wins another 2-3 tours, who's going to be around in 2-3 years time? Like at that point, 2-3 years ago, Sexas was 15, and the majority of people weren't really following his career. So there's going to be another rider. There's in the U23 ranks, there's a couple of his teammates that might even develop into tour win or tour contenders. Then you've got Lorenzo Finn as well, and there's going to be someone else that there's going to be something. I said to Jeremy Whittle, who I'm traveling with in the car yesterday, there's going to be a rider who's about 10 who rode up Alpe d'Huez yesterday that's probably going to win the tour or be a contender in the next 5 years, and they'll say, oh, I rode up the tour the day that Paul Sexas rode up Alpe d'Huez for the first time. So it's really hard to say, but he's got the skill set, he's got the attributes, and he's going to have the team around him if you assume that he's going to stay where he is. But it's hard to kind of definitively say yes.
The first winner of the tour after Pogacar, what's his name?
Oh, wow. Okay, so he's going to go for 3 more years. Remco. I'm going Remco.
At around the time I'm talking to Dominique Serrières on Sunday, Paul Sexas is giving one of his rare in-depth interviews of this Tour de France to L'Équipe. Serrières has thanked us, the media, for understanding how Decathlon have tried to insulate their young star. For the most part, having followed the team for 3 weeks, I can confirm that their protectiveness hasn't caused too much gnashing of teeth. Sexas has his own press officer, giving the team 3 at the race in total. He has spoken to the media at starts or finishes on average about every 3 or 4 days. I get the sense that a lot of foreign colleagues gave up in the first or second week, meaning that for the most part, I'm one of only two or three international infiltrators in the French-speaking scrums. It's also true that access for all but TV rights holders gets worse every year at the tour. As a logical consequence, generally speaking, there are fewer and fewer other outlets and journalists with the will or money to fight for scraps. The L'Équipe interview is a revealing one, particularly given that we've heard relatively little from Cexas over the previous 3 weeks. One place where he sometimes did open a window into his emotions was after finish lines, for he could often become quite animated.
Personne sait qui a le meilleur temps.
Non.
Allô.
Si c'est pour l'instant c'est Evan Poul, mais qui est derrière toi.
He now issued L'Équipe journalist Thomas Pierrotto with a curious explanation, almost an apology. He doesn't drink coffee, but before or during TTs and mountain stages, Cexas said he does take caffeine. Sometimes the effect is powerful, a little too powerful, and the nervous energy spills over. Plus, he told Perrotto, the pressure he puts on himself is enormous. That too could account for his skittishness and the chaos after stages. More broadly and more importantly, Cexas said that he'd hoped to finish on the podium, but he'd enjoyed and been happy with his ride. He now had a clear vision of how to take the next step towards his dream, i.e. winning the tour. His team had also proven they could go on that journey with him. Whether they will, of course, will depend on those contract negotiations with Serres in a few weeks. In the meantime, Decathlon have reportedly already bolstered their support team with the signings of Pavel Sivakov, Ben O'Connor and Laurence de Plus. Just thinking about my contract is an energy drain more than anything else, Cexas told Perrotto. If I stay, I stay. If I go, I go. I don't know how far we'll go together, but at the moment I put my faith in this team and they put their faith in me. At least five teams are ready to make their final pitch. Decathlon, UAE, Net Company, Pinarello Q36.5 and Visma Lisa Bike. That's if Cexas hasn't already made a verbal commitment. Over the 3 weeks we've heard rumours of a done deal with UAE. Decathlon paying whatever it will take, or of another team in the party of five swearing they'll get Cexas because their team manager has befriended his father.
Merci, merci à tous.
The speculation will continue. As for the original question or premise of this series, how France will get back their sporting crown jewel and whether Cexas is the man to do it, the previous 3 weeks had provided some answers, but not all. Liège-Bastogne-Liège in April, and particularly Cexas' mano-a-mano with Pogacar on La Redoute, looked to some like a sneak preview of the cycling god's succession plan. Pogacar was of course 2 years older when he rode and won his first tour. His debut over 3 weeks had come a few months earlier, at a lesser race with lesser riders, the 2019 Vuelta a España. Nonetheless, even at the time, so without the benefit of 7 historic years of hindsight, there was something truly, shockingly out of the ordinary in the way he didn't just win 3 stages and finish 3rd overall, but increasingly outclass, even embarrass his opposition in Spain. It was certainly a very different kind of statement or coming of age to Cexas' 2026 tour. Pogacar of course hasn't ceased to amaze, and didn't even on the last day this year, on the last climb towards Montmartre, in a tour that he'd already won. But France does not need to, and indeed won't find its own Pogacar. A Cadel Evans will do just fine, whether his name's Paul Cexas or something else. We didn't get his on-the-whistle, off-the-cuff reaction to finishing his first Tour de France.
Here comes Pedersen, Philipsen's on his wheel. Here comes Pedersen.
Third way!
Philipsen, incredible. Van der Poel or Philipsen stood. Ooh, it's Van der Poel, it's Van der Poel. You can see the photo on the screen now, and yep.
He was being whisked away to France Télévisions' Velo Club studio beside the finish line. As he went, the next best thing was the man who'd shared more of the journey than anyone, roommate Aurélien Paris-Peintre, spoke for Cexas and about his tour.
Previous year, I just finished for finish, but this year we have some ambitions with Olaf, and I take really, really good pleasure today to work for Olaf. I think we did a super good race with the team. we closed one time the gap and second time. Yeah, no regrets, but it was a pleasure to work with for Olav also, and Paul was happy to pull in front. So yeah, it was a good day for us to finish like this. So we are put for half hour Tour de France now.
And just tell me about the journey of the last 3 weeks. I mean, maybe now you can tell me what was the highest point and what was the lowest point.
I don't know. I think the team was stronger and stronger every week. We show previous day that we are maybe the strongest team in mountain stage. We are often with two or three guys around Paul, so yeah, it was good. And we begin the tour with, for sure, a secret ambition to be in the podium, but now we have no regrets.
There was that ambition.
I think the team team didn't really say that, but yeah, for us, we think about this. But now we are happy with the fourth place of Paul. It's already an incredible result for the team, incredible for him. On only 19 years old, what he achieved in 3 weeks, it's impressive. And yeah, we will see what happens in the future now.
The old adage goes that you're the average of the people you spend the most time with. And over the course of the tour, we'd come to feel that, similarly, those who surround Sexas will dictate his destiny as much as his God-given talent. Pogacar acquired real power and influence only after his 2020 tour win. In contrast, Sexas already has careers, livelihoods, and millions of euros depending on him. Inevitably, the posturing and cozying up will begin, if it hasn't already. The NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar put it thus: "The hardest thing about achieving great wealth and fame in sports is how it changes the chemistry of your relationships. Suddenly, people you've known for years look at you differently. They stop seeing a friend and start seeing a business opportunity, a shortcut to their own ambitions." Our hunch, based on what we've seen so far, is that Paul Sexas has the requisite good judgment, strong values, and determination to stay on course. But it will not be easy, for nothing in this sport ever is. A constant battle between the head and the legs is how Paul Sexas defined cycling before the tour. "It's a fight against myself, and now I know how far I can go," he said at the end.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.